Welcome to the Catholic Sphere. Each week we have a different host and a different focus as we tackle topics important to Catholics around the globe. I'm your host this week, Debbie Cowden. And in today's episode, it's actually part two of Heroic Motherhood and how moms can find holy in the hard seasons of life. So my panelists today are Michaela Harrison, illustrator at the Liturgy of the Home, joining us from Oklahoma. Julia Marie DeGiorgio Woolbright of the Musings of a Catholic Mama blog from North Carolina, and Lisa Canning, author of The Possibility Mom and a Catholic women's business coach from Toronto, Canada. I'm so thankful these beautiful women have joined me to share their stories today. And again, this is part two. So if you missed part one, you can go back and watch it anytime on EWTN's YouTube channel or with EWTN.com/on demand. Now, Michaela, in the first episode, we were discussing your son's diagnosis of a brain tumor. And so you've been on this journey for about a year and a half now. What have been some of the hardest moments in that time?
I think probably the single hardest moment was that moment when we thought he was dying. And he had just had the tumor removed. He was just coming off of the anesthesia. And they were bringing him up to the room, and I was just looking at him. He was groggy, and I was listening to him. And then it was like he stopped breathing, and the alarms hadn't even started going off. And I went and I, you know, hit the code blue button, and all the nurses and doctors came rushing in. And my husband and I were just holding on to each other. We didn't know why he wasn't breathing, and you know, they did an emergency intubation. We now know that it was because he couldn't swallow. So the nerves that control swallow were damaged and not working. And so he basically had saliva pooling up and blocking his airway. So he did make it through that moment. But I remember just thinking, you know, he's not going to make it because he was literally turning blue. It was like watching your child die. But, you know, he did make it through. But then after that, they tried to, it's called extubating, where they removed the breathing to see if he could breathe on his own without being intubated. And I think there was three different times that they attempted, and for about 24 hours he was trying to breathe on his own, and he just slowly kept going downhill and not able to do it because of the nerve damage. And so I think that those times it was like watching him slowly die again. I mean, we knew that they were going to come in and you know, do it, reintubate him, but just watching the suffering of this little two-year-old not being able to breathe on his own. And, you know, eventually, he ended up having to come out with a trach and a G-tube, and, he had that for about a year. Thankfully now he's progressed. We're not at that stage, but I think that was probably the hardest moment for us.
Lisa, thank you for sharing about your miscarriage in the last episode. You gave us some really powerful words of wisdom for the mom who felt like she couldn't survive a major crisis or a difficult season in life. So in your own experience and from what you've gleaned from the women that you coach, what is it that helps a mother push through and find holiness in the hard?
The word resilience is what comes to mind. And what's interesting about resilience is it truly has to be learned. You can read about it. You can, you know, read stories of the saints who were very resilient, but it truly needs to be experienced, I think, to, you know, be lived out effectively. And that's how I think it's, again, it's this sense of evidence. I think why despair can become so quick to take over one's life. And don't get me wrong. Sometimes you just have to sit there and cry. Or sometimes you just have to like eat the pint of ice cream. You know, we do have to honor that sadness and despair are real things. And we do have to feel those emotions. It serves nobody to just repress these emotions or feel bad about feeling sad. And so sometimes you do need to take that moment of like, you know what, life is terrible and I'm eating ice cream out of the actual carton. But once you've done that, once you've taken that moment to pause, you begin to learn, I can make it through another day. I can trust the Lord in this time of suffering. He will provide the time. He will provide the energy. He will provide the money, the means, the whatever it is that I need to get through this challenging situation. But that's like, again, you can read about that. You can read all these stories of how, you know, I love hearing the stories of the saints when their orphanages or their hospitals ran out of money and then somebody just dropped off everything they needed. You know, like it's one thing to read about these stories of God's provision, but to go through it and have that personal evidence, oh, that is what is so key here. And so when you're in that moment where you feel like you can't go on, to literally, like, I have a folder on my phone that literally says, trust in the Lord. And it's evidence. Some of it is quotes of the saints. Some of it is stories. But a lot of it is pictures and memories in my own life where I've been fortunate to see the hand of God in times of suffering. Where when we were homeless, a house was provided. When my daughter was in a hospital, and we had nowhere to live, we had to vacate quickly due to an allergy, somebody literally provided a home at a cost that we could afford. All these kinds of things where you just are able to see, Lord, you are with me, you are for me, and with you, I can do anything. I think the other thing that comes to mind is that, again, it's one thing to believe it. It's a very normal thing to have doubt. And so this prayer of, Lord, I believe, but help my unbelief. That can be very important in this conversation of resilience and pushing through in times of trial.
And Julia Marie, we've also been hearing the story of your daughter, Anastasia, who was diagnosed with anencephaly when you were 19 weeks pregnant. So how did you prepare for her birth knowing that she wouldn't live long? And then what happened on her birthday?
So what I spent so much time researching, I joined an amazing support group on Facebook and just spent every waking moment just researching what the condition is, which was pointless because there's nothing on Google that tells you about what to expect with babies with this condition, aside from they're going to die. You should just terminate. So that having the Facebook group was so helpful because I got to learn from other women, you know, everything from, hey, like they might not be able to swallow well, so you might have more like water retention, seeing how to celebrate milestones. I mean, it was so invaluable, and it just helped us look ahead to, you know, everything from we had received a coffin for her from the Trappist monks, and I believe they're in Iowa. It's Trappist caskets, and, you know, getting that set up to come out to us. There are just so many different ways, thinking back, you know, there's only so much you can do to prepare. The biggest thing was making sure we had our dear priest friend, Father Shaw, on hand so that way he could be at the hospital when she was born, having my sister-in-law there to take pictures of her, take pictures of the birth so that way we could just have any memories we could. I work for Ascension Press in the HR department, and there was I like to joke that past me did future me a favor when we were working on our maternity leave policy or our family leave policy, and or by advocating for miscarriage and infant loss in that policy. So, you know, that was a blessing. I didn't have to worry about that because my work was taking care of me. I knew I was going to have those 12 weeks. So I was able to just sit back and focus on like, okay, I've gotten the big things done. I had called the funeral home, had everything lined up with them. The big thing was just making our way through to her birth.
And then on the day that she was born, what was that like? What was going through your heart and your mind?
There was a lot of peace. We went in on Palm Sunday, and our deacon had actually brought us palms because we didn't get to go to Mass that day. Just with the way everything worked out, he brought us communion. And I remember, like, when he lifted up the Eucharist, just thinking of the scripture that says, you know, I am with you always, and realizing like, wow, he is here. He's in this hospital room with me as I await this birth and await the pain and the suffering that we're going to go through. The induction, I mean, it was my easiest birth, honestly. There was just such, again, the peace was just beyond all understanding. I remember at 3 o'clock was when it was the first time that I broke down. There was just something about it. I looked up, saw it was 3, and I just felt like I'm entering in to my time of suffering. And I just begged Our Lady to be close to me, to hold me in her mantle, and comfort me. And going through the birth, we actually tried to have her be born in her little sack to help protect her head. And we almost succeeded until I coughed and it exploded. It was a whole thing, but she was just so strong. Like the whole time, we were laughing throughout the whole birth. Like our priest was walking out in the hall and he said after the fact, I could just hear the joy in that room. Like every couple of seconds, somebody would be bursting out laughing. And then everything got quiet as the time drew near, as she was getting closer and closer to being born. She was actually born face first, not knowing if she would survive the birth. I remember pushing and just hearing her little lips going. And it just was such a comfort. Like I laughed as she came out because it was just like, oh, that's my girl. That's my strong Italian woman. she's ready to eat. So yeah, it was so beautiful. And
this is Anastasia's legacy. It truly is her legacy. And mm-hmm. she's helping so many people, both on social media and on EWTN airwaves and radio waves, sharing these stories of our children and how our children have defied the odds and our children have been fighters. It has so much to teach us also as parents. So truly, thank you for sharing. And Michaela, thanks to God's grace and the medical professionals who've been caring for your son and Jamie's own gutso and his own strength, he's home and he's improving now. And there was a time, though, when you had said that you felt like you were spiritually crawling because you couldn't stand up. So could you tell us what you mean by that?
I think the lowest point that I was at spiritually was where I felt like, you know, when I went into it, I had a lot of hope. And I was like, oh, you know, maybe there will be a miracle. Maybe this is the it felt like there was so much intentionality in how everything was unfolding. And so I was like praying, you know, let the tumor be gone. And then I was like, and then, you know, the tumor was there. And it's like, I kept like hoping for the next thing. And we had some just absolutely, we had so much prayer. I mean, people around the world were praying. The monks in Clear Creek were praying. We had first class relics brought and placed on him. And so all that brought me peace, but I was hoping, because I wanted to go back home and I wanted to go back. And like with each thing was like, no, the tumor was there and oh, he had the nerve damage. And then it was, you know, he had a stroke and that set him back. We didn't know what was going to happen with the stroke. And then it was like, everything just took so long. And I remember at one point, and I want to be back with my kids. And I hadn't let go of everything before. It was like, I was like, maybe this is all meant for a certain reason. I know what the reason is. And I'm going to reason with God that this is how this should go. And it wasn't going that way. And at one point I was crying. I'm in the hospital bathroom, like crying, talking to my spiritual director. And I'm just like, I don't even want to ask God anymore for anything because he says no to everything that I ask. And this is hard, you know? And I think that was the point where it's like, I don't understand and I don't know what the future is and I can't make sense of it anymore. And so I was told and have been told over and over again, if you can't figure it out, you just crawl. If you just keep your head down, don't try to look up and figure it all out when you're in moments of despair and difficulty, just keep your head low, stay humble and just crawl forward. And everyone kept saying like, this time will pass. And it feels like it's never going to pass. You feel like you're going to be in it forever. And even though it was really long, it's been a year and almost a year and a half now. It is past. And now I can see, you can see retrospectively why it had to be that way. And so that's, but I think that, I mean, I know I'll go through more trials in the future. It's not like it's ever completely over, but during those seasons, I feel like that I've had, you know, and every mom's different, temperaments need different things. But for me and mine, it was like, when I can't figure it out, you just stay low, stay humble. Don't try to, you know, fight it out. Just God has a plan and really trusting in him.
He absolutely does. And his plans are always better than ours. Even if we think, I know I'm kind of a type A, I like to think that my ways are the best ways, and they're not. And God's ways are always better. And Lisa, you and I have talked before about the song, "O God, Beyond All Praising," and that line we love so much. "And whether our tomorrows be filled with good or ill, we'll triumph through our sorrows and rise to bless you still, to marvel at your beauty and glory in your ways and make a joyful duty our sacrifice of praise." And that song resonated with you at the time of your miscarriage. So what does it mean to you to triumph through our sorrows and make a joyful duty of our sacrifice of praise?
It is a choice to get up and keep going. That is just a fact. And again, sometimes it doesn't feel like it's a choice. And sometimes it feels like life is just too hard and you don't want to get out of bed. And you might have seasons where you don't get out of bed. But I really do believe, and this is that line, it's like a joyful duty, a sacrifice of praise. I think that word sacrifice, you know, I was telling my spiritual director about a day when I just was like, I cannot get out of bed. Like, life is too hard. I do not want to face anything that is on the other side of that bedroom door. I don't want to face the kids. I don't want to face a sink full of dishes. I don't want to face my inbox of emails. I don't want to face all of the trials ahead of me. And he just asked me very point blank. He was like, "Well, you clearly got out of bed because you're here. You know, how did you get out of bed?" And I was like, "Well, the baby started crying and I knew I couldn't just leave her in her crib crying." And so it's this notion that it is a choice in those moments and that it is completely possible. It can feel like such a sacrifice. Like, I do not want my feet to hit the floor. I just want to go back to bed. I don't want to face anything. But we can make that sacrifice in that exact heroic moment and trust that God will give us the grace, give us the energy, give us the people, give us the time, give us whatever we need to get through anything that's going to happen. I think too, this notion of like a joyful duty and a sacrifice of praise also presupposes that suffering does eventually come to an end. That there are, like, that just that even in small little moments, you know, like you like that hot cup of coffee or that actual time of silence when you can hear the Lord. The Lord often talks to me through sunshine. So I have many, many moments in my memory of being in church and being so desolate and crying in the pew. But then the sun will kind of just pivot right through, like at that particular moment, and literally like hit me in the face, even though my eyes are closed. I can feel the warmth. I can feel like literally like his embrace. And I have so many moments like that. So even if it is just for a moment, I believe that this idea of a joyful duty and a sacrifice of praise presupposes that those moments are going to happen. Even when you feel like, nope, there's no way, or I don't remember the last time it happened, they do happen. And it's that trust that I will get up, you will be with me, this will somehow sort itself out. And it's either, you know, in the way that I want it, or perhaps in the way that you want me to grow.
Lisa, I'm seeing from our discussion among the four of us that we all think and live differently. The hope that you have causes you to live differently, even if that doesn't make the hard things go away. So tell us about that power of hope.
Pope Benedict wrote an encyclical that people of hope live differently. And for me personally, what that looks like is the ability to persevere. I rely so much on the evidence that the Lord is for me and that he has been there for me. He is with me right now, right this second. And even in these very unusual trials, he will provide. And so I think people of hope behave differently. They keep going. They do things even when it's hard. They don't sacrifice, or they don't, or excuse me, more accurately, like I could comfort myself with online shopping. I'm very good at that. In fact, I could comfort myself with scrolling aimlessly. I could comfort myself by scrolling aimlessly on social media. I am really good at that as well. But being a person of hope means that you choose to maybe do that for 60 seconds, but then know that your actual comfort comes from the Lord. And what's interesting, the more you exercise that muscle, the less even that 60 seconds of, you know, online shopping or scrolling aimlessly on social media, the less of that 60 seconds even becomes necessary, because you have trained your mind and your body, your central nervous system, you have trained yourself to rely more on him and seek comfort from the Lord first. I think that's the biggest thing that I'll sort of conclude with here. People of hope have lives of deep interior prayer. And I think for me, that has been the biggest gift of all the suffering, is I know the Lord is my friend, because I have sat there with him. And just like I would one of my girlfriends here on earth, I have sat with him and bawled my eyes out and said, this is awful. And I have felt him respond. And this life of deep interior prayer and an actual relationship with the Lord where you know he is responding back to you, that is essential to be a person of hope.
Julie Marie, you have been a witness to this firsthand because you've been witnessing God's grace in action. So I would love to hear not only how Anastasia has defied expectations in her life, but also how you experienced God at work in the days following her birth, because she was there. She was alive. She lived longer than we expected that she would.
Yeah. Looking back, it's so easy now that, you know, a year has passed to get stuck on the whys and even the anger sometimes. Just like, what the heck, God? Why my baby? I would have loved her. I do love her so much. But when I look back on her life, it's just, the grace is palpable. He answered every prayer that we had. I mean, she was born alive. And so it was like, okay, like, this is, I got that. Thank you. And then, you know, I remember our priest came in and I was just so overjoyed. I just kept, like, I couldn't even speak. I just mouthed, like, she's alive. She's alive. And, you know, he came in and he gave her, he baptized her. He confirmed her. He gave her communion. And he brought communion for me as well. And, you know, so it was like, okay, there's that too. Like, I'm two for three at this point. And then our boys were able to come and meet her that evening. And we had family pictures taken. My niece, one of my best friends came, my mother, my mother-in-law. I mean, we had so many people who had walked this journey with us that all got to see her and love on her. And at that point it was like, okay, God, like, I don't like it, but you've done everything I asked. So, you know, I'm ready. Like, I'm prepared. You can take her when you're ready. And I waited and we waited and she was still there. And, not only there, but she started to thrive. Like, her coloring, like, she was all bruised from the birth. Like, her coloring got better. Like, the doctors had even said, like, yeah, she's probably going to look like a little purple potato for, you know, for her whole little life. And she defied those expectations, like her coloring, she became pink and the swelling went down and she just looked so beautiful. And then they said, oh, well, she probably is not going to be able to swallow. She'll need a feeding tube. And, you know, they tried to put the feeding tube in and it wouldn't go through. And the pediatrician came in and was like, well, I guess, you know, she seems to be doing okay, because I was pumping and just using a little tiny syringe. And he was like, well, I guess we're just going to have to continue with this way, with the syringe. And I remember looking at her going, it's all right, girl. We got this. We know how to eat. So, you know, there was that expectation that she defied. And I mean, she started to cry. I mean, she was blind and deaf, so she couldn't, you know, hear us or see us, but she just had this amazing sense of touch. And you could just see that she knew what was happening around her. She knew, I could tell, like, when other people were holding her, like her, how she was kind of tense. And then she'd get in my arms and you could just watch her melt. And it was just such a reassurance that, like, oh, she knows that mama's here. She knows that I'm holding her. And I mean, all throughout, we got to take her to mass on Easter. And it was amazing, because we had a parishioner. He had just turned 97 or 98, and he had been in the same hospital as we were in. And our priest at the end of mass was like, you know, we have the amazing Easter miracle of having our oldest parishioner here with us and our youngest parishioner. And I mean, our whole parish had been praying for us. So, like, I kind of circled of life to the baby just to say, like, look, guys, she's here, our little saint. She's here with us. Every last bit of it was just more than we dared to hope for. And God just showed up and showed out, really.
Amen. He did. And I recall you told me that when the time came and she did pass away, that she was able to have a mass of the angels, and that you described her funeral as triumphant. And I just got goosebumps all over my body just thinking about that. And now you have what the church declares to be, this is our Christian hope, a child in heaven, a saint who is praying for you. So I wish that we could spend more time going into these stories, but unfortunately the shows are so short. But thank you, ladies, for the beautiful witnesses the three of you are. And now, viewers and listeners, if you have been impacted by their stories and want to share them with a friend, be sure to share the link to this full discussion, which is parts 1 and 2 from EWTN's YouTube. You also can share links with your friends to EWTN.com/on-demand. Michaela Harrison, Julia Marie Woolbright, and Lisa Canning, thank you, ladies, for joining me. And thank you for joining, too. We'll see you again next week, right here on The Catholic Sphere.